Welcome to Connecting the Community podcast. I am your host, Marge Andre. I will be connecting you to people, organizations, and events that create community. I am creating this podcast in Richmond Hill, an eclectic and very culturally diverse community with lots of trees and streams and interesting people, just up the hill from Toronto. On this podcast, I have the pleasure to talk with Clara Fischetti. She is heading up the Lively Loaf venture at L'Arche Daybreak. Welcome, Clara.
Thanks, Marg. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, I am so glad we found the time to have this conversation. I really want to know more about what you are doing. So as an introduction, I was thinking, do I ask you to introduce yourself or introduce L'Arche? I am thinking that there are many people that could be listening to this podcast that don't know about L'Arche. So can you sort of set the stage?
So L'Arche Daybreak is an institution in Richmond Hill, in the sense that we arrived here in 1969. The land was donated to us way before any of the subdivisions that exist here. We began as a farm. We worked the land until the land around us was sold, and then we had to kind of shift our focus. We are people with and without disabilities in mutual relationship with each other. We work and live side by side, and now we have a bunch of new programs, projects that basically bring us together as people with and without the disabilities, but also give us a sense of purpose, meaning that helps to really highlight the gifts of people with disability who are often misunderstood and marginalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's great things happen up there. It's such just a good place that I'm proud that's part of Richmond Hill. But I've met lots of people who've lived here for a long time and really don't know about L'Arche Daybreak. So I encourage them to explore more. And I'll certainly put a link in the website to let them do that. So can you introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Clara Fischetti. And if you're Italian, you would say Fraschetti. Mm-hmm. And I came to L'Arche actually in 1990, when I was a freshly graduated university student. I lived in one of our homes for a few years. And then I needed to kind of leave and explore other vocational interests, but I always felt this tug to come back. So I kept coming back, and then eventually I came back in a more permanent role. I actually met my husband here. We have four kids. And so my roles have changed from time to time, but I'm primarily the director of the Day Spring, which is kind of a gathering place, a meeting center, a retreat place. It's a place where our community gathers to nurture our community life. But something began to shift when the pandemic hit us, and I think that's going to lead us to our conversation about the Lively Loaf.
Yes. So, yeah, I suspected that you did not have training on bread baking, that you are not a baker by trade. So, let's get into this Lively Loaf program. How did it get started?
So during the pandemic, this center, this called Dayspring that I work at, is a place that brings people together. And as you can imagine, during the pandemic, everything was shut down. And so we were, as we have eight homes in our community, we couldn't be together. And so I was assigned to be with one of our homes. And it was great, actually, to be rooted back into the day-to-day life of being in a home. However, people felt isolated and alienated from each other. And I, like many people during that time, began sort of looking for ways to make life interesting and meaningful, looking for ways to connect with others. As you know, Zoom became a phenomenon. So bread baking became one of those hobbies that emerged out of, because people have time there was a yeast shortage, there was a bread shortage on the shelves. So I was part of that trend of kind of discovering this ancient way of making bread, which our grandmothers knew about, and probably even my mother, but had we had lost touch with that whole tradition. And it was neat to see young people reacquainting themselves with this whole trend. And I was one of them. I was taught by a 24-year-old over Zoom. She spent 24 hours with me over the course of 24 hours teaching me the process. And I was just bitten by this bug. So I began signing up for workshops and watching people online and YouTube, following bakeries that have kind of learned about this ancient way of baking again. And I thought, wouldn't this be a great way to connect with people? So started a little sourdough club, and we called it. There was actually it was started because a man who I was supporting in the house that I was connected to at the Red House here at L'Arche Daybreak, his name is Dave. And Dave, I was telling Dave about my desire to, or my interest and practicing to learn the sourdough process, and he said, "Well, Clara, I would like to bake bread with you." And so Dave and I started baking bread together. And then we thought, well, if we can do it, maybe others might be interested in doing it as well. So that's when we started inviting others. We began ordering bread kits online and started learning together how to make sourdough. And then before we knew it, we had seniors joining us who were feeling isolated at home, young people who were working remotely, looking for a way to connect with people. And so we created these kind of 6-week modules where we would learn the process from A to B to C to D and so on, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and people could show off their loaves, and we'd walk every step of the way with people, and they were buddied up with somebody from another home, from the other homes at Daybreak, plus beyond that in a neighborhood, and so together we began learning this. So then when the pandemic was over, our community director, Trish Glennon, approached me and said, "Do you think we could maybe continue something in person?" And so then we actually visited a local mill. I don't know if anybody knows about K2 Milling in Bonhead, Ontario. It's just about 30 minutes north of here, outside of Bradford. And Brian King, who is the miller there, has been very generous in providing freshly milled, locally grown grains for us. And so that relationship kind of cemented sort of a program that we now continue. And we provide a bread subscription program for people who live in our community, volunteer here, family members of people who live here and work here. And that's been wonderful because it's provided us a little bit of capital to be able to work with to be able to bake the bread. We've gotten some generous funding from some funding programs that have seen the promise in what we're doing. And so we purchased a bread oven, we purchased a mixer, a commercial mixer, a cup, a fridge, a freezer, all the basics that kind of with some work tables. And so now we're kind of in this full-blown program where we're baking at this point only about 30 loaves a week, but we hope that we now can grow with all this new equipment.
Woo. Okay, that tells the story. You've answered lots of the questions I had. Like I thought, you can't have an industrial bakery, but you're getting there, and I love to hear that. I'm not surprised that people have stepped up and organizations have stepped up and supported you. It's great to hear there's a local mill who is again doing some great work with you as well, and that sounds great. But 30 loaves of bread, I think you need to work harder. I hate to say that. So, but I also will put this. I have a list of what I call pandemic positives, and this will go on the list. So that is excellent. So yeah. So I think you've
Thanks.
answered the question, like why sourdough bread? Like that was one thing not rye or whole wheat. Like what sourdough is just because of the special yeast pro like.
Well,
Oh,
let
yes,
me
about 40
explain
years
that.
ago, I used to make sourdough bread.
Okay. Well, then you were ahead of your time.
Yeah.
So sourdough, the reason why sourdough is significant is because as like commercially produced yeast, provides one strain of yeast and provides it with gusto. It's and they package it and they put it on the shelf and it's shelf stable and you can just buy it and make bread with it. Sourdough is a little bit of a different thing. It's basically harvesting natural yeast that's in the air by providing food for it, which is water and flour, and that is it. And when you follow a process of feeding this concoction of water and flour, yeast gets attracted to it, yeast that is just naturally all around us. And that yeast, there's it's a multitude of strains of yeast, and because of that, it actually makes for a healthier mix of yeast and bacteria that together help to create this bread, which is actually easier to digest because you've got the multiple strains. It breaks down the gluten in a way that makes our bodies digest it a little bit easier. So people who have gluten sensitivities often can tolerate sourdough bread as opposed to commercially produced bread. And just to say that that's all that's in our bread is flour, water, and yeast, and sorry, salt. And the yeast is just naturally comes from the air. We don't add yeast. We just allow it to develop in the bread. It's a bit of a science, like creating a yeast strong enough or a starter. We call this, we give her a name actually. She has the name Rosie. And Rosie was a person, a member of our community who lived here. And Rosie was small but mighty. She was this incredible woman who had actually quite a powerful impact on many of us here at Daybreak. And so it just felt fitting to call our yeast, our starter, our natural starter, to call her Rosie. So we affectionately referred to our starter as Rosie. Yeah, it makes for healthier bread. It's locally, it provides support to a local grain economy. We're connected to the source of our ingredients, which I really love as well. It's not just something that gets shipped from somewhere far beyond. So there's something about that is really, to me, kind of completes the circle of making bread locally. And there's a whole movement actually in the UK called the Real Bread Movement. And it's really trying to localize the making of bread in communities because it's such a staple of life that to have bread locally baked with local grains. Yeah, it feels good. And it's kind of, again, as I said, it closes the circle of food and source of food, right?
Okay. Very. I like to hear that. Thank you for saying that. I think you forgot to say that sourdough bread tastes delicious. So
It's very yummy, and we've gotten better and better at it. That's what I love about the practicing piece is that we had some, we had some pretty hard UFOs, I would call them,
Yeah, I can
footfalls
imagine.
at the beginning. But as we and as we get the right equipment, the quality of the bread has improved greatly with the right equipment as well and with practice.
With practice,
So
okay.
yeah, so I would say it's pretty close to being an artisan loaf. I would proudly be able to call it
Okay,
that.
you're
Yes.
bragging. Okay,
Yeah, I am,
that's
absolutely.
good. Okay, so you've talked about you make about 30 loaves. Now, do you get to eat at like how much would you get to eat in that week?
Right. So we have a bread subscription program so all of us who eat the bread pay for it. We all buy our loaves of bread. And I'm going to say that we should be eating bread all the time. I think it's still we all have to be careful about how many carbs we ingest, but if we're going to ingest any carbs, these are the ones to ingest. I mean, they are, yeah, they're good ones. They're good
They
ones.
are good ones. Okay. No. Do you eat the crusts for the bread?
We fight over them, actually.
Okay.
We call it the heel of the loaf, right? Is that end piece. And because they're the crispiest and that's a personal taste though.
Okay, yes. No, it's I'm not surprised. So do you have like a business plan? Like, what do you hope to rise to, in bread terminology?
Oh, that's funny. Thank you. Yes, the goal of the Lively Loaf is one to provide a program that gives us a sense of purpose and
Yeah,
meaning.
okay.
So, and that we're collaborating. So there are so many little steps to making a decent loaf of bread, and those steps can all be distributed among people of all different abilities. And so when we're working together, because some people have said, well, do the people in your community really make the bread? And I often say this is a collaboration. This is a collaboration. I have a specialty, but there somebody like Lucas who works in our program, Lucas has such an eye for details. And Lucas will remind me and remind us, our team, constantly of what we're missing because he has that capacity to hold detail in a way that I can't. Patrick is a man with Down syndrome who lives in one of our homes. Patrick is incredibly precise when he's weighing the flour. His gift of preciseness makes that step the best it can be. And it's that coming together of all of us working at the place of our gift that makes the bread happen. It's not one person ever who makes the bread. It's all of us together, and we all do a piece of it. And that's what makes it so satisfying in the end of the day. It's that we've all done our best to make it the best it can be. And that's such a, there's so much satisfaction that comes out of that. I find it much more satisfying to bake bread in the Lively Loaf than I did in my kitchen by myself, trying to remember all the pieces of it. When I've got Lucas and Patrick by my side, it just makes it so much more of a fuller experience.
Okay, very good. Thank you for describing that. So I'm hoping you really are successful though, and there are some opportunities for me to try this bread. So
Should I add to your? I want to finish that question you asked me about the business plan. So we also get a lot of help with that too. So
okay.
we had assigned to us a student. His name is Noor from the Laurier business program
Okay.
in Waterloo, and they have a what they have a, they have something called a capstone program, which allows students to do a final project that kind of is in the real world and gives the student a real world experience while helping. And in our case, a potential social entrepreneur. And so we partnered with Noor to develop a business plan together. And so he took us kind of as far as he's able to take us. And then the hope is that we'll get another student who will come in and then, kind of continue where Noor began. And so it's, again, it's that collaboration piece. It's drawing on all these gifts out there that can help us take us a little further.
Whoa, that okay. That is a good, very nice answer to that question. Much more than I thought
Yeah.
there. Okay. So I'm imagining walking by your, it's the red house that it's baked at, and just
No,
smelling.
it's the meeting hall, actually, the
Oh, the
meeting
meeting
hall.
hall. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just imagining walking by there in the beautiful grounds and just smelling the bread. But the place, the Larche, you it's not that far from the craft studio, and I want to give a plug for the craft studio because I love that place. It, the beautiful pottery and candles and paper making, the things that happen, and just again the not just the end product, but the whole process is absolutely amazing. And then you also have the woodery. The making the sticks is not quite so glamorous, but it's I like the old barn, but it's
Yes.
still I encourage people to go up there. It's open Monday to Friday. You are closed at lunchtime. I'll put the hours in the podcast notes as well. But anything you wanted to add about the studio?
Well, the studio is a is actually been a great mentor for us because the studio began, oh gosh, how many years ago? Probably maybe 20 years ago, if I maybe longer than that. And so they've been at this for quite a long time, and I'm constantly meeting with Deb, who is the project coordinator there, and so she has a lot of tips, a lot of wisdom, from their experience. So we're hoping that we are collaborating. I mean, we work together all the time. We had a fundraising event for Ukraine, Larsen, Ukraine, where we did some baking. We had a little concert. There's an assistant right now in our community from Ukraine. She gave a concert. The craft studio sold some things to help raise money for Ukraine. So little projects like that are a great way to use kind of the best of all programs coming together.
Okay, very good. There is another reason for people to be involved with Large Daybreak. Coming up soon, May 11th, you have your walk with Hope. You really do galvanize the community. So can you say just a little more about that, and how far are you walking? Are you doing the longer walk?
Usually I would do the longer walk, except I'm a volunteer coordinator this year
Okay.
at the walk. So I'll be meeting actually with local high school students who will be coming from St. Teresa of Lisieux, Our Lady Queen of the World. The walk starts at Our Lady Queen of the World, and from there at 10 o'clock on May 11th, our goal is to raise $90,000.
Okay.
And there's usually about 350 people who join us, and it's quite a sight to behold watching all these folks with the same colored hat walking down through our route. And yeah, there's a 2 kilometer walk and a 5 kilometer walk, and we really invite people from the Richmond Hill community to come and join us and just to celebrate being community together. That's what it's ultimately about.
It is, yes. No, it's a fantastic event, and you've been doing it for a number of years. And it's you do have a celebration. You've got a barbecue afterwards and some entertainment. So it's fun. It's not just going for your 5K walk. So
No,
doing
yes, and there'll be face painting, there'll be tattooing, or not tattooing, rather, henna,
Henna,
henna's.
yes. Okay.
The craft studio will be out selling some stuff. And the mayor, I think, is joining us, so
Yes,
that's
I
very
think he
exciting.
does. Yeah. He I know he's a big supporter of what you're all about there, so that's great. Anything you want else that you want to add?
Just that the funds for the Walk with Hope, one of the primary focuses of this will be to help improve the access of our homes, and our programs, and that's really important that we some of our homes are older and need some updating in terms of accessibility. So this will be a big part of where the money will be going
Okay.
this year. So
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that. It's like many of you, the residents are do need assisted, like wheelchairs and such. So you need to have wide doorways and all of those. So I do hope you're very successful for that.
Thank you.
So I do end the podcast with the guest's response to the question, the same question for everyone. Name one thing that you really like about this community.
Well, when I look around Richmond Hill, I think the thing that I'm struck with the most is the incredible diversity here. At least from our property, you can go in one direction, probably just a kilometer, and you'll hit a Hindu temple. The Islamic Society is just north of us. You can go to a Persian bulk food store. You can, you know, I mean, I just love just the fact that there is so much diversity right here, representatives from all different parts of the planet that reside right here in Richmond Hill and share their culture. And that just reminds us of how small the world is and how we are called to find a way to coexist together and to be community together. And that gives me a lot of hope that we're able to do it here, right here in Richmond Hill.
Very good. Okay. Other people have said that diversity is something they love as well. So I'm glad to hear that from you too. So thank you for that. We will add a lot to the podcast notes because we talked a lot about a lot of different things, to opportunities, some of your more information about the Lively Loaf program, the Walk with Hope, your studio. A lot of great things are happening up there. So thank you, Clara, for taking the time to do this podcast. Thank you for listening. I would very much appreciate you sharing this podcast. Please tune in next week as we continue to explore the community. Consider emailing me at Marge, M-A-R-J, at margeandre.com. I welcome suggestions for podcast guests. Stay well, stay connected.